I'm here.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 11:01. The board has returned from break. It is Tuesday, October 1st, 2024. We will return to the meeting, but first do a roll call. Dr. Bastillo?
Here.
Dr. King?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton?
Here.
Dr. Hike?
Here.
And staff, Ms. Crawley?
Here.
Ms. Bryant?
Here.
Ms. Richardson, we know, is still out of the country. Dr. Sinish?
Here.
And my name is Judy Chepius, and we are also again joined by Mr. Harris, our Assistant Attorney General. Dr. Bastillo, the meeting is yours.
Okay, we'll be moving on to an informal hearing. Case 2406, Shiloh Evans, PTA. Is Ms. Evans on the call?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. I do have a script I need to read before we begin. It is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There is one case for the board to consider. The matter will be heard by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I will provide a brief summary on how the board conducts initial reviews. This summary applies to all the cases that we will hear. I will first begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I'm the board's chairperson. I'll now ask the other.
Excuse me, Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Are you reading the informal hearing script, or are you reading the initial review script?
I'm reading the initial review script. Thank okay. you. Ah, there we go. I'm sorry. I will change. Okay, we will move to the agenda items for the informal hearing. This is a reminder that the board meeting is being recorded. This is case number 2406, Shiloh Evans, PTA. And we'll have the executive director call roll, and each one respond with their name and position.
Dr. Bastillo?
Here, chair of the committee.
And professional member, Dr. King?
Present.
Professional member and vice chair, Mr. Leone?
Oh, secretary, here.
And professional member, Mr. Greer?
Mr. Greer, public member.
Mr. Barton?
Joshua Barton, public member.
Dr. Hike?
John Hike, professional member.
And Ms. Evans, please introduce yourself and if you have any counsel present with you.
I'm Shiloh Evans, and I don't have a counsel present with me.
Great. This interview is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by the way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules have occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions: issue a decree of censure, place restrictions on a licensee's practice, issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500, issue other disciplinary actions. Issue non-disciplinary order requiring completion of specific continuing education. If the board finds a violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficient to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds there was no violation of the board statutes or rules, the case may be dismissed. If the board finds that the violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of the license or certificate, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. If the board finds the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority, the board shall vote on that referral. And Judy will have you swear in the witnesses.
Okay. One question first. Liz, are you presenting this case or am I?
I can do it.
Okay. Then I'm going to swear in Dr. Sinish and Ms. Evans. Will you both raise your right hand? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, Ms. Evans?
I do.
Dr. Sinish?
I do.
Thank you.
Great. We'll have Dr. Sinish give us a brief overview of the case.
Ms. Evans was arrested and charged.
There is a slight echo, Liz, but I think it's I think it was just background noise.
Oh, okay. I thought she was trying to say something. Sorry. Okay. Ms. Evans was arrested and charged with two counts of DUI and one count of reckless driving on or about February 10th, 2024. The board received this information via AZDPS fingerprint clearance notification letter. Ms. Evans was contacted for additional information. She states that she was not charged at the time of her arrest, that it was not a final judgment, and that was the reason that she did not report to the board. She provided no other details about the nature of the events leading up to her arrest, nor any additional information or action taken since her arrest. She states that she is attempting to get the charge dismissed. Ms. Evans' BAC was 0.12 at the time of her arrest. She did not report the charges to the board within the 10-day regulatory requirement. Ms. Evans has been cited for the following statute violation: ARS 32-3208, criminal charges, mandatory reporting requirements, civil penalty exceptions. A health professional who has been charged with a misdemeanor involving conduct that may affect patient safety or a felony after receiving or renewing a license or certificate must notify the health professional's regulatory board in writing within 10 working days after the charge is filed. And B, an applicant for licensure or certification as a health professional who has been charged with a misdemeanor involving conduct that may affect patient safety or a felony after submitting the application must notify the regulatory board in writing within 10 working days after the charge is filed. Ms. Evans was not present at the board's initial review of this matter. She renewed her PTA certificate for the 2024-2026 renewal period. As of the last communication with Ms. Evans on July 24th, 2024, she states she is still awaiting a court date. An email was sent to her on September 12th, 2024, asking for status of her court date and the case, but she did not respond. This matter is for your review.
Ms. Evans, do you have an opening statement?
Yes, I would just like to say that I did respond to the last email in September. I'm working with my attorney right now, and my court date is next Tuesday, October 8th. So I haven't had a court date yet. It'll be my first.
Are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, ma'am.
Does anyone have any questions?
Ms. Evans, in the information that we received, it shows that you had said that you had not been charged yet. Did something change with that? Because then I also noticed that you've taken a substance abuse course for 16 hours, and I'm guessing that's part of the what they asked you to do, or is that just something that you did on your own?
My attorney advised me to take that course, so, you know, I took that course to be proactive, and I'm sorry, what was the other question?
Just if you've been officially charged.
No. I haven't been to court yet, so my attorneys currently were in the process, and she's, I don't really have any other information that I can provide right now because I haven't had an update from my attorney. Just last that when I spoke to her, she was working with the prosecutor, and I haven't heard back from her yet.
Okay, thank you.
The other thing that I can say is that I do take accountability for just missing the initial. I didn't know that I needed to report it 10 days after the arrest. I was assuming with the verbiage that it was after court. So I'm sorry if I just misread the laws.
Any other questions?
It's always interesting to me, these cases, you know, where licensees come to us and say, I haven't been charged yet, and yet their driver's license is suspended, and on the documents we have, the citation was filed on the 10th of February, arrest record was filed on March 25th. It's confusing to me how we have licensees come to us and say, well, I haven't been charged yet, and you're thinking, where are you coming away with that? So I'm disappointed that she didn't report it to us in the 10 days. Whether or not she was or wasn't charged, she was handed a ticket that had DUI on it, and her driver's license was suspended for 90 days, it looks like, on the ticket. So for me, that's pretty serious. That's definitely different than, right, a speeding ticket that you go on about your way and you either go to driving school or you pay the fine, right? So I
understand. I completely understand what you're saying, that I also believe this is serious and I'm taking it seriously. And again, I overlooked, like, yes, I did get arrested. I'm taking accountability for it. I'm doing what I can to make sure that I'm handling this in the best way. And I'm admitting that I did look past that part because I was thinking, you know, I'm got to go to court first, and then I'm really hoping that these charges will be dropped. And that's where I kind of guess I missed the mark with that.
Thank you.
I guess this is probably a question for Mr. Greer or Mr. Barton. Is there a difference between being charged and being ticketed?
So I think legally probably not much, but it would depend on the ticket, and it would be way outside of my area of expertise. So I don't know that I have a great answer for you.
Okay.
But I mean, my understanding is, I'm just thinking to, like, the speeding tickets I've gotten, not to admit my proclivities here, but I think they all are charging documents, right? I think they say this is the statute we think you violated. Mm-hmm. This is your court date.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you have to resolve it before the court date.
And I would agree with that.
Okay.
Are you doing any other support, Ms. Evans, AA, or do you have a sponsor?
For a sponsor for what?
For, like, alcohol support?
No.
And you're still working?
Yes, ma'am.
I feel like we typically continue these until after their court date, until we have more information. Um, So I'll move that we continue this case to our next meeting after her court date.
Second.
Did the second?
Giovanni.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay. I think we're ready, Judy.
You're muted.
Thank you. I was once again being profound. It's been moved and seconded to continue the case 2406 Shiloh Evans PTA until a future meeting after Ms. Evans' court date is completed. Dr. Basile.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good luck with court.
Thank you.
Okay. And then we'll move on to agenda 9, complaints and other disciplinary matters. Case 2415, Yanessa Carnejo, PTA. And this is an initial review. Is Ms. Carnejo on the call?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay, perfect. I will go back to my other script. Okay, this is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There is one case for the board to consider. The matter will be heard by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I'll provide a brief summary on how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all the cases. I will begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I'm the board's chairperson. I'll now ask the other board members to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Kelly King, physical therapist, professional member, and vice chair of the board.
Giovanni Leone, professional member and secretary.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
John Hike, professional member.
Thank you. For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney, if represented, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask that those speaking not take the time repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy after being given an opportunity to modify their behavior will be removed from the meeting room. Once the board concludes its discussions with the parties, it will move into deliberation. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberation, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt the process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary actions such as issuing an advisory letter or order of continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to formal hearing. The board may also determine whether the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for their disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation or may warrant referral to another agency or authority, it may be more appropriate to move the case to an informal hearing. So we'll begin with the investigative report.
Board opened case number 2415 after adjudication of case 2368, Paul Kempton. Ms. Cornejo is a PTA that was working under the supervision of Paul Kempton. Based on interviews and medical record review, the board cited the following potential violations. ARS 3220445, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist assistant, including exceeding the authority to perform tasks selected and delegated by the supervising licensee, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. ARS 3220413, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed, and ARS 3220440, failing to maintain adequate patient records, and as it relates to R424304, adequate patient records. Ms. Cornejo received a copy of the investigative report, but did not provide a written supplemental response by the deadline. This matter is for your review.
Thank you. Ms. Cornejo, do you have an opening statement you'd like to make?
No, I don't, ma'am.
Are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Of course.
So I see that you have taken a couple of documentation classes. Can you tell me what you've learned from those and how that differs from what you were doing previously?
Yes, I did. I feel like it was just more like teaching me like to be a lot more detailed and, you know, showing my skill therapy that I was providing for the patient, documenting everything, you know, as far as modalities, and also I was missing to write like delegated plan of care to, you know, PTA from my supervising therapist and whatever it was, whether it was like adding exercises or adding any new modalities or taking away anything as far as the same modalities or exercises, whatever changes my therapist was doing that day.
Can you tell us a little bit about how your delegated patients or what your conversations were like with your supervising PT?
So basically the schedule is set in the mornings and, you know, either when I bring the patient back or if they say something new or I'll just get them started with, you know, either on the bike or whatever it is that we're warming up on. Paul's usually there, out in the gym or working with another patient. So if the patient said anything new or, you know, I would usually, I'll just go and let him know, hey, by the way, so-and-so is, you know, either having more pain today or whatever it is, any changes. And then he would just either say, okay, we'll just keep, you know, keep the same, keep doing what we're doing and I'll just go chat with him later or throughout the session. Basically it's like we just discuss it as we are out in the gym.
I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the timeline in terms of you starting practice there. And he was the only therapist at the time. And so it seems to me like in your response, you feel like you didn't know better. And so you were doing what he was asking you to do. He was your supervisor. He was your supervising PT. Mm-hmm. And you made a statement, I don't feel comfortable nor respected by Paul. So I'd like you to just tell us a little bit about your experience. And then you also then go into talking about your, after that, the therapists that were brought on, you've learned mm-hmm. a lot from. So if you can kind of just tell us a little bit about that.
I think that statement was, or it was like kind of like an end to my, you know, my writing to my situation. And it was like, I definitely still don't, like, I don't feel like he's respected me, like, cause now I can see how he treats the other therapists that we have. So it's a, you know, it's a difference. And, I don't know, I almost feel like, you know, if I did go to him for something, it was never, what's the word? Like, not necessarily taken serious, but it was, I guess I just did whatever he, you know, if he told me, well, like, for instance, if I would say, ask him like, hey, so-and-so said you worked on their hip, for instance, and we were doing exercises for something else, like the shoulder perhaps. And, I'm like, are we doing the hip now or what do you, and he'd be like, well, yeah, kind of like, I don't know. He always just kind of overlooked me like, well, yeah, that's what we're doing now. Like it was never, I just don't know how to explain that. But I mean, now that I can tell the difference from the two therapists that I work with now too, it's like, for instance, as far as plan of care, they will see, for example, just yesterday, we're finishing the day and one of the therapists says, hey, you know, Yessi, by the way, you're going to see so-and-so. I just evaled them today. You know, they're here for this and that. And like just a little, you know, a little bit about the patient. And so that's, you know, that I really appreciate that because it's just, and they've also told, you know, the therapist also told their patient, hey, by the way, you're also going to see my PTA when I'm not available. If I'm a, you know, if I have a new patient or, if the time that you want to come in, you know, she's available, if it's okay that you see her. So I feel more respected that way. If I would go back and get a patient that Paul evaluated and now I'm going to work with them, it almost seems like they're a little disappointed, like, oh, I have you because, or where's Paul? Or, you know what I mean? It's kind of in that sense.
And so you had never seen that kind of model until these two therapists came on. Is that
correct?
Mm-hmm. Ms. Cornejo, is this your first job as a PTA?
Yes.
And then just a question. So in your statement, I read that you stated, I don't make changes or take patient care upon myself, but the investigative report seemed to indicate something really different based on documentation, that modalities were added or documented by you that weren't necessarily part of the plan of care, and there was no evidence. Can you just tell us a little bit about your freedoms and things that you were able to do or chose to do with patients outside of what the physical therapist had in the notes?
Yes. Well, I can tell you for a fact I can never be like, oh, we're going to do an ultrasound on your hip today because you're, you know, you're saying you're hurting more. It was always whatever Paul did the previous visit. So if Paul saw them yesterday or Monday and Wednesday came along and they said, oh, that ultrasound really helped that he did. And I'd go say, hey, that ultrasound helped. And he said, yeah, we'll go ahead and do it again. You know what I mean? It was never, I never took it upon myself to just, you know, pretend to be a therapist and say, hey, well, I'm just going to change the plan of care today, or we're going to add this, or we're going to add that. A lot of the times, if I started to work with a patient and they're out in the gym and I'm working with them, they're on my schedule and Paul would come over and, you know, they're passing by and in passing have a conversation. And I'm going and helping another patient in the gym. And then I look over, my patient's gone. Paul took them back to a treatment room. So that was a lot of what was going on. So, you know what I mean? I know he did the ultrasound, or I know, and I, the time it was like, it was I was undocumented, and like, okay, I started the patient for the first 25 minutes perhaps. And then now he took them. Now now I do, for example, a co-treatment, or I worked with them this amount of time, and then he, took over for the remainder of the visit. That's what I'm doing now. Like, I'm making sure if he's going to take a patient back or whatever, whatever time I spend with that patient, that's what I am responsible for, and he's responsible for whatever else he finished with.
So it sounds like, I'm just going to recap and then maybe tell me what you've learned from your document, from your CEUs and working with a therapist. It sounds like he did something in treatment the prior visit. Maybe it wasn't documented or part of the plan of care. The patient said they liked it. You went and talked to him. He said, yes, do it again. And so you did it again. But there's no trail of
right
of that being delegated to you, being added to the patient's plan of care. And so you can see from our perspective, it looks as though you took it upon yourself to do that, right? Because we can't find that, right? That chain of command. So tell me how that's different for you now.
So now I'm writing, with every note of mine, I'll write under the care of supervising PT, plan of care was delegated to me, and then I will write whether there's changes or no changes. I'll put no changes today, or I'll put progress as patient tolerable or tolerates it. If anything was added, like a hot pack or a cold pack, or, and then usually on our exercise grid, I'll always write like on the bottom, like per PT or whatever, now it's just like, I'm just being more, thorough with that.
Perfect. One other question about documentation and communication. So there was also a note that a patient had been out for 6 weeks or so. I think it was 6 weeks, might have been 6 months. Came back, you saw them. They said that they had re-injured themselves, but there was no PT eval. So what happens in that situation now for you? A patient comes in, they say something to you that they've hurt, something hurts more or something's changed. How does that look for you now?
I just give it back to, for the most part, I don't have that issue with the other therapists. Like, if I just go and, something new, they will right away reassess and then come back to me with a plan, different plan of care. Or with Paul, it's just now I feel like I'm just like, here you go, like, you decide what you want to, I don't know, it's sometimes it doesn't change. She's like, well, go ahead and start them again, or it's just.
So am I hearing you say that you're still working with Paul Kempton in that same setting with that same the same situations that brought you here?
No, I'm saying towards the end of right before this started, I was like moving forward. I don't want, I don't want to be, because we had a conversation about it, and I was a little upset that I'm here and, embarrassed and disappointed. And I'm just like moving forward. I don't want to see your patients that you just, for instance, they've been coming here for a while, or, initial valuation isn't, to par or whatever. I kind of just want to stick to the patients that aren't doing the same thing over and over. Like, he'll still do modalities, and I just don't want any part of that as far as. But now that we have the other two therapists, like, I'm busier with more of their patients as well, so I don't see that. Paul's working in the mornings only now, so it's been a nice change.
Thank you.
So there were originally some billing concerns. Can you talk about how you may have changed how you bill?
The bill, well, now what I do is, like, as soon as I bring the patient back, I kind of just put a little time in on my, I always have like little note just to write, you know, either subjectives that I get right away or something so I don't forget. And then just very, you know, cautious of the, you know, units that I'm using and, how to separate like either Therax activities or Therax, you know, just the time in or the time that I personally spend with a patient. So if, you know, the patient is still exercising, sometimes they get chatting with another patient there. So if it takes longer and they went more than, you know, their time, I just write the time that I was personally with that patient.
Did the documentation class that you took help you distinguish between therapeutic exercise and activity? And
it did. It did. And but still, I'll go up to one of the therapists and be like, how does that this, you know, change it to Therax or, you know, so I still, they are very helpful to me.
Have you changed anything within your documentation in terms of, you know, designating certain exercises under a certain CPT code and explaining in your documentation why you chose that CPT code?
I'm not sure. Like, you mean like from Therax activities to?
Yeah, just distinguishing between, you know, if you, let's say you put clamshells on your flow sheet, are you designating that exercise as a specific CPT code on the flow sheet or in your documentation or anything like that?
No, I'm not.
Okay. And then are you, in your documentation, are you explaining rationale as to why you build a specific CPT code at all?
Mm-hmm. Well, on the assessment part, I'll explain or why we're doing that certain exercise.
Either the exercise or the CPT codes.
I'm not. I don't, or maybe I'm confused to where I would see that on my, you mean on the units or?
Yeah, and I don't know if to the rest of the board, is it okay if I kind of explain it in a way like how I do it in my documentation? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so an example of what I typically do it within my documentation on the flow sheet, we have a little box where we can actually designate what CPT code we're billing each exercise as. So if I put clams on there, I can designate it as therapeutic exercise, or I can put bridges on there and designate it as neuromuscular reeducation or something like that. But then additionally, within my billing section, we have like a comment box. And I'll typically put in there, you know, therapeutic exercise performed for purposes of improving strength, endurance, range of motion, and flexibility. And I'll do that for each CPT code so that there's rationale as to why I built those CPT codes. And then obviously on the flow sheet, you know, all of them are designated to a specific CPT code so you can know what my rationale was for those.
Okay. I understand that. Yeah, no, I don't. I don't separate it like that, but I do write like whatever exercise was done for purpose of like strengthening or mobility or, you know, depending on the exercise.
Yeah. And I would recommend definitely getting in the habit of doing something like that to where you're giving rationale by designating those exercises as specific codes.
Mm-hmm.
It really can make a huge difference in just justifying why you're billing the way that you are.
Yeah, I would. And there is a spot like for our comp that we can put comments on that would be useful to write that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So it sounds like you've had a much more positive experience once the other two therapists joined the practice.
Yes. And continue to, I just feel like every day there's something new that, you know what I mean, is that I learn or that we talk about, or they could say, oh, you can do this that way, or, you know.
Any other questions? Okay. All right, so what are everyone's thoughts?
I appreciate that she's taken ownership and taken accountability and taking forces and things. I also appreciate that this is her first job as a PTA, and that was her first supervising PTA, and what an awful situation for her to learn under. And so I'm a little bit torn because it's pretty bad. She's made some great changes. It sounds like she's got some really good PTs who are really showing her what the PT-PTA supervising relationship should be. But some of these things are pretty spooky. It's hard to know, right? Because now there's the documentation both by the PT and the PTA are not great. And ultimately, generally it falls to the PT, but it's not good either way. We're kind of in a pickle. What are your thoughts, Dr. Bustillo?
Yeah, I think this was a very difficult first job out of school for sure. Definitely got into some bad habits and was forced into situations of doing too much and taking on too much that without good mentorship and supervision. I do appreciate the motivation to take a few documentation classes, and I'm happy that there's good support there now. My concern is, should these PTs leave, she's left in the same situation. And so she has to have that background to be able to make the right choices. Mr. Leone?
Yeah, I'm in agreement as well. One of the things I'm kind of torn on is, you know, the documentation aspect. It's hard to know whether that stuff was documented by the supervising PT on the previous visit or if he neglected to put that stuff in there. So, you know, obviously without having Ms. Cornejo's documentation showing that she had those discussions with the supervising PT, it's hard to know, you know, what really happened there. So I'm glad that she's made a lot of those changes, that she's being more diligent about her documentation. I definitely still think that there can be some education that might be beneficial for her, you know, in regards to supervision, and in regards to billing and coding as well. And I think that could be beneficial for her practice, but as far as where I'm kind of leaning with it, I'm leaning more towards a non-disciplinary, you know, continuing education action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I agree as well. I think there's a lot of mitigating evidence here. I do like what we have heard today and what we have seen. I think it is a good thing that she has had the courage to kind of stand up and say, look, I don't want to work with this physical therapist anymore. He's not going to be providing adequate supervision and adequate instruction to me. You know, it seems to me like this has been a painful learning experience, but a learning experience. And I'm impressed and happy with the changes that we are seeing and hearing about. So I would be inclined, you know, given that mitigation, I'm inclined to have kind of a lighter hand than we might otherwise do. So I would agree with you, to be honest.
Agreed. I don't think the role model was set for her right out of practice in terms of starting her first clinical. And then, you know, this supervisor never really corrected her in terms of all the things that could have been documented or how to do it. But I don't think there was really any mentoring going on. And so I would be in favor of a non-disciplinary letter as well.
So I'd like to make a motion then to for a non-disciplinary board order that requires 6 hours of documentation, 6 hours of billing and coding, 3 hours of supervision.
Would you allow her documentation courses, if they would have been approved by us now, would they serve to be okay for this order? Or do you want to do one?
I'd say let's have her submit them to Judy. I don't know that she did 6, 6, and 3, so maybe she didn't do enough and needs more.
Right, right.
Yeah, she's done 4 so far, it looks like.
Okay.
If that's the case, then none of those will be used for renewal, though.
Right.
Of licensure now, yay, PTAs are licensed. Mm-hmm. Let's have these done in 6 months. Is that too long? 3 months?
No, that's fine.
Okay, 6 months.
I'll second that. Any further discussion?
I do have a question. Dr. King, you and Dr. Bastillo, you were talking about her CE being taken prior to today's initial review, that it may count. We're in an interesting time frame, yeah, at which point we have just renewed and we have not yet audited. So there's the question, if those courses that she has taken were built in as part of her requirements to meet her requirements at the end of the 24 cycle or not.
When did you take those?
As soon as I spoke to Ms. Richardson, I can't remember if I wrote down the date, maybe February or March. But I had already took an LSBT course, so I already had my hours done with that course alone.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's bad to take another 6, honestly. Now that she's having time to practice, Dr. Bustillo, yeah, I think taking another to see. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you don't know what you don't know, and then you practice and then you take it again and you go, oh, okay, now it's even more clear to me because I've been doing it right. Mm-hmm. So
we'll recommend that she try to choose a different class.
Yes. Okay. Agree.
Yeah. Dr. King, if I may suggest, I think maybe we just change the language to say she may submit her previous credits, or she may, I think if we use permissive language instead of mandatory language about the previous classes, I think that allows her to kind of decide whether she wants to take another class or whether she has enough to meet her requirements for last year. I think that may be the kind of less punitive way to go, but I'd be open either way.
Yeah, it does sound like she needs a few more credits and documentation.
Yeah, she may, and I think she needs those either way.
Agreed. Yeah.
Did we muddy the water for you, Judy?
Yeah. So, my understanding based on the conversation is that you would prefer that while the credit she has already taken has brought her to this point, you're interested in another 6 hours of documentation, 6 hours of billing and coding, and 3 hours of supervision in order to further progress her practice. Is that correct? So not counting the credit that she's previously completed?
Yeah, it looks like she took the billing and coding July 21st. So yeah, it would have been in the prior. And then another one July 23rd.
Yeah, but Mr. Barton's point was that if those were classes that we would have approved, that they might count. And she would just have to then make up the deficiency.
Okay, so she's allowed to submit what she has already completed because she said that she took the LSVT, probably the LSVT big course, which is probably more than her 10 required hours. Mm-hmm. So these are the documentation, the courses that she took in the manner of this case, are sounding like they were above and beyond her required.
So it wouldn't be a part of an audit should she be audited for the 24 cycle. So what you're saying is that she may submit that for review if review proves that it would have been approved at that time. We can count that credit towards meeting these. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And you were giving her 6 months to complete? Mm-hmm. Is that right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I've got it. So in case 2415, Yesenia Cornejo PTA, it's been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order to include continuing education, which shall be completed in 6 months. The courses must be pre-approved and may be completed online. They do not count towards renewal requirements. The continuing education shall be completed in the areas of documentation for a minimum of 6 hours, billing and coding for a minimum of 6 hours, and supervision for a minimum of 3 hours. If continuing education was taken prior to this initial review, the credit previously earned by the respondent after the notice of complaint may be submitted for consideration in satisfaction of the hours recorded, the hours ordered.
Well done.
Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Ms. Cornejo, just really quick, I know you're relatively new to the practice. If something doesn't seem right, reach out. Go back to your school and ask your instructors, call the board. But if something seems really different than what you learned it would be, you've got resources. So take care of your license. Reach out and find out what you should do, okay?
Yes, thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, good luck.
Ms. Cornejo, the board staff will draft up documentation of this order and make sure you get a copy of it. If you have any questions at that time, I'm happy to help you.
I have a real quick question. You said that they have to be approved, the classes, so would I email?
Yes, you'll submit that documentation to me, and I'm happy to discuss this in more detail after the meeting.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we do have a secondary initial review on person AR.
Yes, present.
Oh, great.
All right. On August 21st, 2024, AR, who is a PTA, self-reported to the board a DUI that occurred on August 19th, 2024. The public access to court information website and the court document he submitted lists this as an extreme DUI, which is a BAC between 0.15 and 0.19. AR reports that he believes the extreme DUI charge is based on his breathalyzer results and not the blood test results. AR does not yet have the blood test results. The public access to court information website also lists previous court matters involving AR, including a DUI that occurred on January 10th, 2020. He described it as a basic misdemeanor DUI and completed a court-mandated course. AR reported the 2020 DUI to the board. It was heard at the January 28th, 2020 meeting, and the board took no action. AR did self-report the 2024 DUI to the board within the required time frame. However, this is being brought to you as a preliminary review because it is an extreme DUI and because he also has the history of a previous DUI. This matters for your review.
Thank you. AR, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, ma'am.
AR, I have a question. I'm looking at your the documents that we have in front of us, and one of them is a letter from your director of rehab. And in it, it states that she's known you and worked with you since 2006 and that you've never allowed your alcohol addiction to affect your work. Can you help us understand what she's referring to around your alcohol addiction?
I've known that person for a long time. She is very much a tough love person, and I think that's just her way of stating that. I think she has, and this is, I mean, you might want to ask her, I don't know, but she has some personal experience with this in her past, and that's just, I believe that's just the way she chose to label this, but it has not, and as she said, it has not interfered at all.
Have you ever been evaluated by a physician or an addictionologist to determine whether you actually do, in fact, have an addiction?
I am not sure of the term you used, addictionologist. I am in a program right now that I have chose to get into. There was a screening process that I went through with that. I believe you do have a letter from that person or that facility, Sun Valley.
It's just a progress note saying that you've attended 46 hours of treatment.
Actually, that is incorrect. I have not attended 46, to be honest. The entire program is 46.
Oh, I see.
It says assigned, and then next to it, it says 16 hours completed.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything about an evaluation or a summary of a assessment or screening. It just says you've been nice in groups.
I spoke with Mr. Dan Blue, B-L-E-W, on, I believe it was the 5th of September, and they listed it as a screening.
It says date of screening 9/5/2024.
Right, but no, like, results, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No results on it.
Right.
The opinion I was under was the fact that they recommended the 46 course was their, for lack of better words, recommendation or their opinion after I was screened.
I think the problem is that with this being a progress report, we just don't have the initial report.
I can ask him for that. I have no issue asking him for that. When I did speak with him, he said, this is what I can do for you. And I said, again, it's kind of his area of expertise as far as, you know, dealing with this, not mine. So he said, this is what I can give you. And I said, thank you very much, sir. And he sent me a copy.
And of course you can understand, I'm sure, that our concern is that this is your second DUI and this was an extreme, and at least the second one that we're aware of. So, you know, there's some concern about making sure you're fit and well enough to be practicing.
I appreciate that.
Yes. Other than the treatment you're in, are you doing any other support? Do you have are you in AA? Are you doing any other meetings?
At this stage, I am not in AA. I did seek out some advice on that, and I was told that at this time that probably I'd be more beneficial doing the counseling and the group courses, so that's where my focus is at this time. Since that letter was written, I have also attended two additional group classes. I'm not sure how you want to list those, but two groups. And I am speaking with, as it says there, my boss. We have known each other for a long time, and we sit down sometimes in the morning before things get started, and I'll reflect and talk about what has happened. I also am involved with the church, and I speak with the pastoral staff regarding just different ways to deal with the what I'm dealing with, the stresses, the anxieties, etc.
Did you attend any or have any supports after your 2020 DUI?
At that point, I basically did what I was told to do through the court system. This time, I am initiating on my own.
Thank you. don't know what the question is.
One of the concerns that I had is in the information that we got, it says it was indicated that the night you were drinking, it was approximately 12 to 15 hours prior to the start of your next shift. I'm not a huge drinker, so I don't know how long it takes for all of that to get out of your system, but is that a regular practice for you?
No, sir.
Or that close to your next shift?
No, sir.
No? Okay, so just kind of a fluke occurrence that happened with that specific situation?
Yeah, there was, I don't know what the proper term is, but circumstances that I was not in a good place at that time, for lack of better words, and that is the, if you want to call it crutch, help, whatever label you want to put on, that I leaned on at that time, and I have obviously since learned that that was not a wise decision. And it's something I will not do again.
Okay.
I had some personal things that I was going through with the family health and health issues regarding family, and I did. Well, obviously, what I did was wrong, and I did not act appropriately, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing currently, so that I can deal better with those kind of things. If they come up, when they come up, of course, life happens, they will come up again. And so I am trying to prepare myself and give myself the tools to better deal with those kind of circumstances.
Thank you. I appreciate the clarification.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? Okay. What thoughts do people have here?
Actually, I lied. I do have one more question.
Okay.
Sorry. Have you been to court for this recent incident yet?
Not at this time, no, sir.
Do you have a court date schedule?
Not at this time.
No. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Giovanna, are you thinking tabling this until after the court date, until we find out what the court says, or?
That was my thought, only because that's typically how we handle these cases. So I kind of wanted to get an idea of when that might be coming up.
Yeah, I'd like to see him stay with his program and or some type of support. You know, at least through the court date, and then see him, you know, have him come back after court.
Karen, can we do that, or do we need to
open
an investigation and then have him come back? Is that right, Mr. Harris?
It is, Dr. King, members of the board. If you're inclined to continue this matter for purposes of receiving additional information, you would probably want to open up a complaint.
Okay, then I make a motion that we open a complaint.
Second.
Yeah, I feel he's taking some good steps right now, and I'd really like to see those continue to ensure that he is safe to practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I understand your point, Dr. Bustillo, but on this one, he did everything that law requires him to do. Yes, he made a mistake. He didn't timely report it. I have a couple of concerns as well about the second DUI, but Yeah, this one I would be more inclined to dismiss.
As opposed to continue until after his court date?
Yeah.
It
would be to take no action. Sorry.
Yeah, to take no action. That would be my inclination.
Excuse me if I could interject, if that would be okay with the board.
Sure.
Thank you for your consideration. I am committed to this. I feel like a house fell on me with this one. This is no joke, and I am not taking it in any light way. I am very serious about this. I am not, you know, like I said, this is not a light issue in any way, shape, or form, and I'm not taking it that way. And I would like the board to know and understand that that is how I am looking at it. This is not a, oops, I made a little boo-boo kind of thing. This is extremely serious, and I am taking it that way. So I just wanted to put that out there that the board understands that. I do understand that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we do currently have a motion on the table that was made and seconded.
Yeah, I think the only thing that really rose to a concern to me, and why I would want to open up a complaint is just the time frame of when the drinking occurred, so close to working another shift. And again, I don't know how long it takes for that to come out of your system and everything, but you know, that would definitely be a worry of me if he was showing up to work and that was still in his system and it was potentially modifying the way that he was thinking during that time with patients. I think that's the only reason that I would consider opening a case here. Otherwise, I can understand where Mr. Greer is coming from. I don't know if anybody else has that same concern.
I share your concern, Giovanni. I also think, though, that this is the second time we've seen this in front of us. I mean, it's been 4 years, but nonetheless, he didn't have follow-up last time, and here he is again. And so I appreciate that he's doing all the things, but I think to be consistent with what we've done in the past, we can always open it. He comes and shows us all the things, and we can, you know, dismiss, right? But I don't. The fact that his own boss referred to him as having an addiction is, I can't overlook that, right? It says he's never had let his addiction interfere with his work. I would rather just keep an eye on him, see him again, and we can make a decision from there.
Again, if I could interject real quickly, if that would be okay with the board.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your patience. I did ask about that. And what one of the things that was stated to me was that they just wanted to clarify that this was not having to do anything with drugs, that it was alcohol, and that is the word they chose. Again, I am not a daily drinker. This was a thing where I made a very, very bad choice in dealing with a situation I was in. I found out about my mother fell and broke her hip, and she is 89. She'll be 90. And in our profession, we know that's not really a good prognosis. And I just took it really hard. And there were some other things that, you know, were also with that. And again, I chose to deal with it in a poor manner. And that was my choice that I made. And I understand that, and I take that. And that is why I am going through the course that I am, the 46 hours. I am, you know, seeking out help. I am talking with people who can counsel me, and I am going to other people, including the clergy at my church, and talking with them, different ways to deal with these things, et cetera. So I appreciate Mr. Leone's concern about the, you know, the time frame. But this is not a daily, certainly it's not now, but it was not a daily thing. This was something that was circumstantial, and it was, I'm trying to pick my words wisely, excuse me. There were circumstances that I allowed to get involved, and that was my fault for doing that. I should not have allowed those circumstances to affect me the way I did, and shouldn't have chosen the path that I took. And that I know that I was wrong in doing so.
Okay. Well, we still have the motion in front of us, and so any other discussion? Okay, Judy, I think we're ready to vote.
It's been moved and seconded to open a complaint against AR. Dr. Bastia.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
No.
Mr. Barton.
No.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay. Good luck, AR. I hope things go well for you.
Thank you. I able to practice, is that correct?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you very much. And anything from this point, I'll be receiving some kind of correspondence that I need to do. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you very much.
May I ask, were you citing any specific statutes?
Liz?
Okay.
Would it be ARS
32-2448?
Yes. Thanks, Judy. 2044. Mr. Harris, does the motion need to be amended or a new vote taken?
Just a new motion, I think is fine.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Judy. Yep, that's it.
Which one was it?
32-2044-8, practicing as a physical therapist or working as a physical therapist assistant when physical or mental abilities are impaired by disease, trauma, or the use of controlled substances or habit-forming drugs, chemicals, alcohol, or other causes.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, members of the board, I think the motion could be that we move to cite, what was it?
32-2044-8.
Thank you.
We need somebody to make and second that motion, if that's your motion.
Oh, sorry. That's what we're waiting. Okay. I move that we open a complaint citing ARS
32-2044-8. Second.
Okay. Okay, it's been moved and seconded to open a complaint citing the potential violation of ARS 32-2044-8. Practicing as a physical therapist or working as a physical therapist assistant when physical or mental abilities are impaired by disease or trauma, by the use of controlled substances or other habit-forming drugs, chemicals, or alcohol, or by other causes. Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
No.
Mr. Barton?
No.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
All right, so good luck, AR. The board will get in touch with you.
Thank you very much.
And then we will move on to agenda item 10, PT compact matters, review, consideration, and action. And we have Rebecca Trost, PT. And I saw Rebecca's on the call.
Okay. Excuse me. Dr. Trost, PT DPT, purchased an Arizona PT compact privilege based on her home state of Iowa on September 6, 2022. Dr. Trost stated she went to the board's website in October of 2023 to try to obtain an Arizona PT license. However, this was during the software platform migration when the board website had blackouts. She sent an email to board staff inquiring about getting an Arizona PT license in November. After the platform migration, the board's website became operational again for PT licenses on November 27th, 2023. Dr. Trost stated she continued to check the board website over the next few months and submitted an application for an Arizona PT license by endorsement on March 29th, 2024, when she realized the new platform was functional. Her Arizona PT license was issued on July 2nd, 2024. However, during the final review of her application, it was discovered that her Arizona driver's license was issued October 26, 2023, which established Arizona residency. PT compact rules state that an individual's home state is determined by where they hold a current valid driver's license. PT compact rules also state that compact privileges can never be used to practice or work in an individual's permanent home state. However, Dr. Trost continued working on her Arizona PT compact privilege after obtaining her Arizona driver's license. At that time, PT compact rules required notification of address change within 30 business days. The rules have since changed to 60 business days. If you apply the more generous 60 business day window, her Arizona PT compact privilege would have been terminated on or before January 25th, 2024. If you apply the 30 business day window, her Arizona PT compact privilege would have been terminated on or before December 11th, 2023. Dr. Trost continued to practice on her Arizona PT compact privilege until she received her Arizona PT license on July 2nd, 2024. Dr. Trost confirmed that she did work as a physical therapist in Arizona during the time between when her Arizona PT compact privilege would have terminated and when her Arizona PT license was issued. This matter is for your review.
Are you willing to answer questions for the board, Ms. Trost?
Yes, ma'am.
So I guess my big question here is, we've had so many issues with the PT compact, and once you have your driver's license, that's where you live. And so now we have months that go by and you're practicing on a compact. And it kind of puts us in a bit of a bind, because it means that you're really not practicing in Arizona lawfully. And so, I do appreciate the fact that the system was down for several weeks last year. Why did it take so long for you to try to get your endorsement license?
Yeah, of course. I checked frequently. It was a saved bookmark on my laptop. I was checking frequently, and I realized I was checking and I was seeing like the neon yellow and I was thinking the neon yellow, it's migrating. I still can't do it. So I was like, wow, this is taking a really long time. I called the compact and they said, you know what? Just don't change your address. I'm like, okay. And then one day I had a coworker say, I just renewed my license. I said, how did you do that? The platform is down. And she said, oh, you can do it now. And I thought, oh my goodness. So that's like the first thing I did. So it was like, I saw the neon yellow. I saw the bold letters and I thought I still can't do it, which I have now learned that it's still neon yellow and there's still bold letters. So I wasn't digging deep enough to realize there are some things you can do, some things you can't do. I could have applied for a license and I just simply thought I still couldn't. So it's really silly. And yeah, I apologize sincerely for putting you in a bind because of course that is not my intention. I have had every intention to get an Arizona license and as soon as possible. I was very stressed about it. I was very sad about it, but I thought there's nothing I can do about it. The platform's down. So yeah, I wish I would have realized it sooner, but I truly just thought the platform was still down. So I apologize.
You're muted, Dr. King.
Dogs are barking. So, Ms. Trost, did it occur to you during that time to call the board? Actually reach out and call someone?
I know. Because I sent an email in November and I sent an email to the board I sent an email or a message through the board and they said, you know, basically she said, this is out of our control. We don't know how long it's going to last. So I thought it kind of was like, you know, we don't know. There's nothing we can do about it. It seemed like a technical issue, not like a board issue, like not you guys, like a technical issue. So I felt like I reached out and that was the answer I got. So you're right. You're totally right. I should have called again. I should have reached out again. You're totally right.
Yeah. And do I have the dates right that you moved here in October? So from October to July. So 8 months you practiced here with your compact.
I moved to Arizona in September 2022. And then I had no plans of staying. So I had no plans of staying for 3 months of a travel license travel. And then I was no longer a traveler, but I just signed a 9-month lease for an apartment thinking I'm still not staying. I'm only staying for 9 months. For personal reasons. So I still was like, I'm not becoming a resident. I'm not staying here. And then I signed another year and I thought, okay, actually I had a coworker say, like, do you have an Arizona driver's license? I said, no. And she's like, we were talking about all the car accidents. And she's like, you should really get an Arizona driver's license. Like, what if you get in a bad car accident? Like, you want to have Arizona license. You want to have Arizona insurance. Like, she's going to work out a lot better for you. And I was like really nervous about getting in a car accident. So that's why I was like, there's a lot of car accidents out here. So then she just kind of was like, you need to go and do that. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go do that. So it wasn't an intention of becoming a resident. And you're right. Like I've reviewed those rules on the compact and I've seen it now. It's in multiple places on the compact website and it's clear in one spot. I think in multiple different places it talks about a license and I understand that as a PT license, but they're referring to a driver's license. And so I've pulled the compact to talk to them and they haven't even been able to give me I've talked to a couple people that haven't even been able to give me a clear answer on, I'm like, can you please explain this law, this rule? And, you know, they even are like, So that's where it's just tricky. And so, yeah, it's tricky and I apologize. And yes, I should have reached out again. And I had no intention of becoming a resident. So if I would have known that, I wouldn't have gotten an Arizona driver's license. I should have known that. Definitely should have.
Are you still in Arizona?
Yes, I am.
So you plan on being an Arizona resident?
Yes, I am now. I definitely am now. That's, yes, when I started pursuing the Arizona license, that's when I was like, yeah, I think I'll be here for a while. Like, it was still just kind of up in the air. I was like, oh, you know, I think I will. And then, yeah, when I signed another year of my apartment, I'm like, yeah, I'm here for good. Got a great community, great people. I want to continue to foster these relationships. I really do love it here. And yes, I am definitely here for an indefinite amount of time now.
Any other questions?
This is Mr. Greer. I would move that we offer Ms. Trost or Dr. Trost a consent agreement pursuant to the unlawful practice matrix, 91 days or, I mean, of 31 to 90 days would be 90 days with early termination, a $460 fine, jurisprudence exam, notification of employers, payers, and patients, and an ethics course.
Second.
Yeah. If she does not accept, to invite her back for an informal hearing.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we do with all people that are not currently licensed for a period of time, so definitely agree. Any further discussion? Okay, I think when you're ready, Judy, we can call the question.
So in this case, Dr. Sinish, correct me if I'm wrong, this matter differed slightly from other cases that you have heard in this vein in terms of Ms. Trost was not required to renew her compact privilege using an obsolete driver's license. So a complaint has not yet been opened. Is that correct?
Correct. Liz? Correct.
Okay. So the motion would include opening a complaint and offering a consent agreement consistent with the disciplinary matrix for 90 plus days. Correct? Okay. Okay. So in that case, we would need to cite the violations.
And I might have heard two different time frames. Are you doing 31 to 90 days or 91 days or greater?
The 31 to 91 days. 91 days or greater, we don't have a matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in previous cases of this nature, you have cited ARS 32-2044-1. Violation of this chapter, board rules, or a written board order. You have cited in other ones 32-2044, or excuse me, 2048, which is unlawful to practice in any manner to claim to be a physical therapist for a person to claim designation of physical therapist unless that person is licensed pursuant to this chapter. But the more possibly definitive one will be ARS 32-2053, which is the physical therapy licensure compact. And as it relates to some of the rules in the licensure compact, such as 1.1L, a licensee's home state means that the person's true, fixed, and permanent home is the place where the person intends to remain indefinitely, to which the person expects to return if absent without intending to establish domicile elsewhere. Special exceptions are provided for active duty military, as well as Rule 3.1.A. Compact privilege holders may be audited at any time to verify compliance with home state residency requirements, or 3.1C, in addition to complying with reporting name and address changes required by the home state, compact privilege holders must also notify the commission of a change in name, home state, address within 60 business days of the change. So those are all options.
Do you need me to pick one?
Sure.
Because I think they all apply.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. We can certainly cite them all. Okay, then. So in the matter against Rebecca Trost, it has been moved and seconded to open a complaint and offer a consent agreement that is consistent with the disciplinary matrix for unlawful practice of 31 to 90 days, which includes 90 days probation with early termination possible, a civil penalty of $460, successful passing of the jurisprudence exam, evidence provided of having notified employers, payers, and patients of the time frame in which the individual was working outside of the statutes, and an ethics course. The ethics course is typically 3 hours. Is that sufficient? Okay. And in that consent agreement, we would cite violations of ARS 32-2044-1, 32-2048-A, 32-2053, as it relates to Rule 1.1L, 3.1A, and 3.1C. Is that accurate? Okay. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you. The board will be in touch. Ms. Trost.
Okay, thank you for your time. Wait, I'm sorry, real quick. Does probation mean I can still practice?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
How's everybody doing? Do we need another short break, or are we good to keep going?
I'm going to have to drop off in about 10 minutes, so...
Let's see if we can do some of the rules then and see where we go with that. We don't have any old business, so we'll go to board business and reports. And A is the rules committee. So is that, we'll have Peg Hiller present.
It is. I have a... I have a memo to read, and as soon as I can find it, there we go. Okay, so, and I do believe there are a handful of Rules Committee members on the call as well.
Yes.
So at its July 25th, 2023 meeting, the board voted to reform the Rules Committee and tasked that committee with discussing and making recommendations regarding potential changes to the board's administrative rules prior to the mandated 2024 five-year rules review. The committee was made up of 9 appointed members and held a total of 7 meetings through 2024. The committee reviewed the rules and divided the identified potential rule change tasks into individual task groups who further researched those rules and reported back to the committee. The results of the committee's research is set forth in the attached recommendations. Agendas, minutes, and audio recordings of all committee meetings are provided on the board's website. The board is requested to review the recommendations and determine whether to adopt the recommended rule areas should be submitted in conjunction with the 2024 five-year rules review. Please note the possible language suggested by the committee reflects the committee's discussions. With any potential rule changes, language is drafted in consultation with an experienced rule writer. That rule writer consults statute and existing rules to ensure consistency throughout. It is not requested at this time that the board adopt the possible language submitted by the committee. Actual rule changes will occur over time following the state's prescribed processes. Please also note that the draft recommendations uploaded for board's preliminary review included a typo in R424-401B. That was corrected in the second upload of documentation. But it was regarding the total number of contact hours which shall be earned by a physical therapist assistant as submitted as a recommendation by the Rules Committee. The correct recommended number was 20 hours, which was reflected in the updated recommendation file. So those recommendations are for your review and discussion.
My turn?
Sure.
It's a pleasure to be here with you all. The report pretty much summarizes the work we did over the course of 8 months of meetings. They were lively. They were certainly interactive, not controversial. We had identified 12 areas of rules to look into that might need updating or some revision. Those were processed, narrowed down, blended to the recommendations that you see in the report that was submitted. Once again, we went ahead and drafted some possible rules language so you would know what it might look like, but by no means, you know, are we asking the board to adopt those recommendations of specific language, but rather to consider the areas of recommendation and do with it as you will. And as the report says, we met 7 times over many months, and I think accomplished the purpose that we were created for. So happy to answer any questions, discuss anything in detail.
I'd like to commend the committee. They did a phenomenal job with the research and the meeting, and the people that can actually write some of this language just boggles my mind every time. So it's a pleasure to be on the committee, but kudos to the entire committee.
You know, I would just add, as far as the composition of the committee, there were 9 members. We probably outreached at least 30 or 35 different therapists and assistants who were identified in the areas of academia and the professional association and communities of interest. So I think we had 9 very devoted, hardworking members. And we hope it's helpful in guiding the board as they process this 2024 five-year rules review.
Any questions?
What are our next steps? Dr. Bustillo, do you know?
Well, we need to adopt these, and then my understanding, Judy can correct me, is that then she'll submit these to a rule writer, and then they'll and put it into acceptable language.
Well, yes, there are a few steps in between all of that. So okay. And the 5-year rules review is something where I have never personally been through. So yet another learning experience. But the rules review, the 5-year rules review is completed in front of the governor's regulatory review council. So they're affectionately known as GRC. So the proposed rule changes are written up. There is a very specific format that they have to be written up in. There is a very specific manner in which they have to be presented. I'm not 100% up to speed on all of that, but we are consulting an experienced individual who has been through this, who will help us navigate all of these processes. So it's my understanding that the first step in these processes is identifying for GRC the rules that the board would consider altering for whatever reason or in whatever circumstance. How in depth that has to get on each specific rule, I'm uncertain, but I think it's just to lay out the potential reasons for why these are being suggested. So for example, the coursework evaluation tool, which is the first one on your list. So amending current language to accommodate FSBTT retro coursework tools. So current rules require the use of coursework tool 5. Coursework tool 5 has been enhanced to become coursework tool 6. But there's a danger in utilizing one stationary coursework tool for all applicants because it doesn't necessarily take into consideration the year that they graduated, the requirements at that time, or the more current requirements. So broadening that ability to utilize the coursework tool that is appropriate to the applicant's time of graduation or newer, which is the suggested adjustment, helps us to insulate the board and the practitioners to verify that they are indeed being evaluated on the level that should have been based on their education and the time of their education. So all of that information would have to be kind of explained to GRC for each one of these changes. But the actual writing of the rules comes further down the road after, you know, the board would have additional input in actual terminology or drafting and there would have to be meetings, public hearings to allow people to input to the rules, any kind of rule changes. So the board adopting these is basically, in essence, the board saying, okay, for the 5-year rules review, we want all of these to be considered potential changes, or half of these, or whatever the board decides, based on the committee's work. But that would be the next step, would be then presenting this as the 5-year rules review of rules that the board is considering editing in some fashion.
And if I may, I might suggest if the board as an action could accept the report, not necessarily adopt the report. Accepting the report means you accept the outcome of what the committee is recommending, and then you have the prerogative to pursue these changes, to not pursue these changes, to change the wording. So if that would be an appropriate term, then I would encourage the board to accept the report, and what you do with it from there is, you know, up to the board's purview.
Well, some decisions will have to be made in advance of the 5-year rules review, which, by the way, is due on Thanksgiving Day. So that's a very quick turnaround. Next step is to getting to that point. So perhaps the board recommends the changes in accordance with the committee's work, Something along those lines. If that's what the board chooses to do.
And Judy, correct me if my time frames are wrong. The board could also just take these and you know, review them in much more detail based upon this presentation, and we can bring it back later this month, and that would still give you sufficient time to prepare your report for GIRC. Is that correct, or is it necessary for the board to do something at this meeting?
It would be preferred to do something at this meeting because that gives us a chance to make sure it fits in whatever format we have to present it. And therefore, if additional questions arise in that process prior to the next meeting, we could bring that back to the board for additional clarification if that's necessary.
Sounds good. Thank you.
But moving forward, it shouldn't be what the board chooses to do in this sense, I don't believe is actually the last step in any of this. You know, if there's public comment that comes in that raises serious concerns over something, because once the rules are written, they have to go back in front of GIRC again. There's a whole nother process at that point. And there's nothing to say that all the rules would be written and presented to GIRC at any one time. It might be done in chunks. These rules reviews are every 5 years. So over the span of the next 5 years, this is the information that we would be working on if the board chooses to adopt it or to move forward with it.
Well, I will move that we accept the report from the Rules Committee and pursue the recommendations made for next steps.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
So it's been moved and seconded to accept the report provided by the Rules Committee and initiate processes based on these recommendations in preparation of the 5-year rules review. Is that accurate, Dr. Bastillo and Dr. King?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you again.
It's been a labor of love, so that wraps it up. Thanks.
Thank you, and to your whole committee.
Yeah, it's great. Great job.
Dr. Bastillo, I'm going to drop off, okay?
Yep.
Thank you.
Have a great one.
Have a good week, Josh.
Let the record reflect that Mr. Greer exited the meeting at 12:49 p.m.
Okay. We're up to you, Ms. Judy, for the executive report.
Okay, so the first thing is just simply a recap now that the renewal season is over, a recap of the numbers. There were a total of 8,462 PT licenses and PTA certificates that were renewed. That's a breakdown of 6,390 physical therapists and 2,072 physical therapist assistants. That is, doing the math, that is approximately 9.3% increase over the 2022 renewals. So that trend is continuing, right? Hovering right around that 10% increase every renewal cycle. Great.
Good job.
Any questions about the renewals in general before we move to the audit question?
Do you have a breakdown? I'm just curious of like how many of those are active versus how many are inactive or retired licenses? Have you seen, I guess I'm asking, have you seen an increase in inactive or retired licenses year renewals?
And increase, not so much. I have run those numbers in the past. I did not include them here. I should have, but if memory serves, it's right around under 200, I think, in total.
Okay.
There's not a vast majority of those individuals who inactivate or retire. And the truth of the matter is it's always kind of a revolving cycle because those who inactivate, a lot of times there's a fair representation of them who perhaps maybe have not completed their continuing education. So they inactivate first, and then when they've done everything, they reactivate, which includes an automatic audit of the continuing education. So a reactivation from not practicing or retired includes an audit. There is that revolution or somebody who's taking some time off or out of state or whatever. We get them to come back. So less on the retired, but more on the inactive not practicing. So.
Okay.
Anything else about that? Mm-mm. Okay. So then the next one has to do with with the audits. So we are, of course, in our audit season, and those audit notices need to go out. So I need to determine with the boards what the board's wish is with respect to auditing. The board, in previous years, the board adopted the ability to utilize CE Broker, but we have not finalized that due to contractual requirements. So that's not to say that practitioners can't use it. Practitioners are welcome to use it at any time, but the vast majority of the audits that are performed will still be performed by email, which is an imperfect process, but it's what we have right now. Therefore, I'm requesting that the board elect a 2% audit, which is consistent with what it did in the last cycle, which would equate to 170 licensees. That's a fair amount to do via email. But I'm happy to address any questions or address any concerns in that manner.
It's such a task for you guys staff-wise. I wish there was a different way, you know, or a way to, like, have a subcommittee or a work group that could help audit, you know, board members that could help audit so we have a little bit bigger, you know, picture, I think. I mean, I know we've always done 2%. 2% of 8,400 is such a tiny number, honestly, when you think about our practice. So I mean, it is what it is. And I don't know what other states do or if there's any other options to increase the workforce to help with these audits. So it's not all sitting on the three of you or it's just the three of you, right? It's you and Monica and,
typically I do the audits.
Oh, Judy. Do we have any other options? I guess I'm just going to ask, is there any other way that we as a board can do, can assist or support in our audits?
So through this whole migration, this Thentia migration that has extended not only for us, but multiple state agencies long beyond the original planned 1 year. There's a module in Thentia that includes continuing education. And we were hopeful that that was going to be a module that would allow us to do things. However, mm-hmm. there were some inherent problems. The system that is developed is not sophisticated enough to handle the Arizona requirements of a mandatory Category A, but an optional Category B and Category C with vacillating numbers of how those categories can be applied. So that was one hurdle, which this system simply couldn't do. The other hurdle was the fact that continuing education could not be entered into the system to count for one cycle when it was past that cycle. So, for example, our cycle ended in August. Our audits don't ever occur until September, October, through that time frame. So there was no way for somebody to be able to enter their information and have it accurately count towards a cycle that had in the mindset of the system to be closed. So that became a problem. There was also, if that module is put into place, it prevented anybody from submitting their renewal application if they didn't meet the requirements. But the meeting the requirements in the system was impossible based on the Arizona rules. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we extracted that module to prevent additional confusion and, you know, to process 9,000 plus renewal applications and the associated questions in a 2 month period is mind blowing, mm-hmm. but to do it when everybody is having systematic questions and problems, that just raises it to a whole new level. So we are not the only ones that have discovered these insurmountable hurdles in terms of the way the system currently functions. So there has been progress in other boards to move through the potential of CE broker and potentially integrating that as well. Okay. If we get that kind of integration, if we can manage the contracts and all of those kind of discussions that have to happen, if we can manage that, that will allow us to have additional people assist but right now we're stuck between a variety of external forces that just aren't allowing it at the moment.
Okay. It's just a lot. It's a lot on you. So maybe we can hope for next year then that we can have a better system in place that we can look at, you know, more than just 170 out of 9,000 licenses to, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. yeah.
And that is, it should be, you know, not only are those individuals who have gone not practicing or gone retired, when they reactivate, anybody who reinstates, who didn't renew on time and yeah. just simply went to an administrative suspension, any of those who reinstate too are automatically audited as well. So, you know, that's not the lion's share of the people that renewed by any stretch of the imagination, but it is those individuals who lapsed for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
they're automatically audited.
Okay. Is that included in the 170 or is that in the
no.
and beyond? I gotcha.
No.
Okay.
Would it be more efficient for you? Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Kingman.
No. Go ahead, Giovanni.
I was going to say, would it be more efficient for you guys in the future if it was just mandatory for people to, I don't know if the system has this option, but to upload their continuing education certificates with their license renewal. So everything's there. You don't, and it takes away the reaching out to anybody and trying to collect their certificates and all that.
Well, in a perfect world, that would be lovely, but that's where we run into the problem with the tabulation. So there, in a system like that, it can't just be, you know, upload whatever you have and call it done and we'll figure it out from that. It has to be tabulated in some fashion. The system has to be able to be able to apply it to the requirements to determine whether the requirements are met or not. So, you know, I mean, if we had 9,000 people or 80, I guess I'm overestimating with 9,000, 8,462. If we had 8,462 individuals uploading continuing education documentation, potentially at the rate of, you know, 0.5 hours, per course, that's an amazing amount of data then that has to be managed by the agency. And then sifting through that, unless there's something in place that tabulates it or provides a realm of timeframe in which that credit can be earned, we would have them uploading documents forever. And there would still, after the fact, be that back and forth.
Okay.
So do you need a motion from us, Judy, to approve auditing 2%?
Yep.
Okay. I make a motion that our board staff audits 2% of the licensee renewals for our rules and regulations.
Continuing competence?
Yes, thank you.
Second.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded to audit 2% of the renewal applicants for compliance with the continuing competence requirements. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes. Thank you. Next up is our new legislation. So we have been busy and will continue to be busy with respect to the new legislation. So those items that were passed during the 56th legislature's second regular session without an emergency implementation clause became effective on September 14th, 2024. Included in those bills were Senate Bill 1267, directly affecting the board's statutes, and House Bill 2910, affecting the board's revenue by adjustments to the sharing percentage from 90-10 to 85-15. There's a typo in your documents. It's 85-15, not 85-10. That split is for the Board of PT fund versus the general fund. For House Bill 2910, board staff worked with representatives from ADOA and Thentia to adjust all revenue codes appropriately reflecting the 85-15 split. ADOA software used to collect those funds has been spot checked to ensure that the fund split required is being correctly applied to purchases. With Senate Bill 1267, that resulted in statute updates throughout the board's statutes. The board's website links to the updated statutes and updated PDF of the revised statutes has been drafted and posted to the website. The board's meeting materials included a copy, which can be downloaded and or printed as desired. Additionally, the board's website includes on its homepage a link to the strike-through version of Senate Bill 1267, as well as a link to the statutes and rules webpage. In the coming weeks and months, staff will endeavor to update all web pages, web forms, and review substantive comments. Matters requiring board review will be presented as they're prepared. Notable changes of Senate Bill 1267 but are not limited to the licensing of PTAs, the removal of PT and PTA students from the supervision ratio. On-site supervision is still required for students. The PT's ability to order imaging and addition of telehealth as a means for PTs to provide general supervision for PTAs. Additional considerations are that required rule changes to comply with statute changes will be included in any new rule packets currently in development. And the board's mission statement requires updating and is provided, it was provided for you in a strikethrough format for your review and consideration. If the board wishes to update its mission statement as indicated by eliminating references to certificates and certificate holders, we would request a vote to do so. If additional changes to the mission statement are requested, required, the board would need to consider that as well. So the board will also face a practical matter of adjusting currently certified PTAs to licensed PTAs. Section 21 of Senate Bill 1267 specifies a physical therapist assistant who is certified pursuant to Title 32, Chapter 19, Arizona Revised Statute, on the effective date of this act may retain the certification until renewal, at which time the Board of Physical Therapy shall issue a license. So what that really relates to is the fact that any new PTAs that come to us with an application are being licensed as PTAs. Any, since this bill took effect after the renewal cycle, PTAs that were current certificate holders are still certificate holders at this point. And that would remain until, the 2026 renewals. So you can see that that's going to create some discrepancies.
Mm-hmm.
So we have updated the wall certificates and the wallet card templates through the Thentia platform. So those are already in production. Those are already prepared. The board by rule is permitted through statute. Currently charges $10 for a duplicate wall certificate. Staff requests that the board consider granting PTAs self-service and payment waived access to wall certificates for a period of time. Doing so will allow the currently certified PTAs to download and print a wall certificate that identifies their credential as licensed. And if the board wishes to grant this access to PTAs, we're going to request a vote to do so as well. One other additional item for consideration is that there will be a week-long blackout period to facilitate pushing changes associated with the new legislation to the AZ Law Jurisprudence Exam. So the blackout period will be October 10th through 17th, at which point the Jurisprudence Exam will be inaccessible. The FSBPT is notifying directly the 11 candidates who were previously granted eligibility but did not yet schedule that exam. And moving forward, staff is informing additional candidates of the blackout period when granting exam eligibility. Of course, when that blackout period ends, we will eliminate that kind of notice. So at this point, we continue to proceed with all of the changes. You know, PTAs have been certified for many, many, many years, so it affects almost every form and document and web page and reference that the board has. So we'll be correcting all of those as we go. So in essence, I'm happy to answer any questions. The two action items that are being requested are if we want to update the mission statement, that a vote be managed to do so, and if we want to provide access to self-service access and fee waived to the wall certificates for PTAs for a time period, we'll ask for a vote for that as well as an identification of the time period in which to enact it.
And we can do that now? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll move that we update our mission statement to remove any wording that involves certification of the PTA.
Second.
Okay. So in essence, then the mission statement would be the mission of the Arizona State Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent, unprofessional, and unlawful practice of physical therapy. The Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes the standards for the practice of physical therapy, continuing competence, and testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licenses qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapist assistants, and receives, investigates, and adjudicates complaints against licensees.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so it's been moved and seconded to update the board's mission statement by removing references to the physical therapist assistant certification. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Thank you. That motion passes.
I move that we waive the fee required for physical therapist assistants to access the self-serve Thentia system to update their wall certificates.
And wallet cards, is that right too?
Wallet cards they already have self-service access to.
Okay, perfect.
But the statutes and the rules typically require a $10 fee for duplicate certificates. So,
Karen, would you be willing to have that time frame maybe be a year?
I think it's going to take time to get the word out. And so, honestly, feel like until the next renewal cycle.
Okay. Love it. Yeah. I think at least a year minimum, and if not the whole renewal period, because it is going to take time to get the word out.
And there are still going to be PTAs that are going to like, oh, we're licensed now?
Or PTAs are like, wait, why don't I just already have a license? Because it got passed. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So I get it. Some education and some time.
Yeah.
Okay. I second your motion if it hasn't already been seconded.
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded to grant physical therapist assistants self-service access and to waive duplication fees for wall certificates until August 31st, 2026. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
And Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
I do have a couple of questions on the changes in these statutes before we move on. But I don't know if is there anything else we need to do with this?
Not in this regard, not for voting purposes. So I'm happy to answer your questions as I can.
Okay. So one question that I was getting from PTAs at my work is there anything that they need to do regarding it changing to a license? The answer I've been giving them is no. You're automatically going to be changing to a license at this point.
Correct. It's just at this point, it's a terminology change.
Yeah, it's not like a change in number or anything like that.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so I've been giving them the right information on that. The other question I have is, so the one where it says the addition of telehealth as a means for PTs to provide general supervision for PTAs, a question I was getting is, does that mean that a PT is able to supervise somebody under general supervision if they're in another state, which the answer to that is, in my mind, is no, because if you look at the rest of the rules would not allow that. But so what exactly does this change to the statute actually change, or other than they can do it audio-visually with PTA?
Mm-hmm. So the advice that we always give, the Arizona statutes and rules refer to the practice of physical therapy in Arizona.
Yeah. So
if there's any crossing of state lines, that has to be confirmed with any other state that they might be crossing the state lines for. And there are telehealth statutes that address that. There is a telehealth statute specific to those providers who are providing telehealth into Arizona that they have to register, and there's a process to do that. But Arizona licensed PTs and PTAs, telehealth refers to that practice in Arizona. And Mr. Harris, if you have anything additional, feel free to jump in. So our statutes don't indicate, you know, anything that might happen in California or Oregon or wherever. We don't have that jurisdiction.
So was the purpose of that change right there more so to clarify that a PTA could perform telehealth under general supervision? Was that more the purpose of it?
Well, if you're asking the purpose of it, I can't necessarily speak to that because the legislation was brought forth by the association.
Yeah.
So the board doesn't make statute, the board enforces it. So, you know, and we're getting questions all the time on these things, but the board has not experienced cases where it has had to adjudicate any of these matters yet. I think that it might have just been a way of solidifying the idea that telehealth, you know, because under general supervision, of course, you've got that requirement for the PT to go to the location in the time frame if it's still required. So it could potentially be used in a way that, you know, this is the communication method between the generally supervised PTA and the PT. Of course, if it's still in the patient's best interest for the PT to physically be there, then that would be something that they need to figure out kind of at that time. If the board receives any kind of complaints in that arena, that's one of the things that will be, of course, investigated or reviewed. You know, if somebody showed up by telehealth, but it should have been in person, you know, that might be a direction then in an investigation. But I don't really know the purpose other than just to say, you know, just that it is an option.
Okay. That clarifies, at least to me, what I'm thinking about it is accurate. I mean, really, in regard to that change, nothing has really changed in regards to general supervision.
I appreciate your question about it too, Giovanni, because I could see how we've had these before us that could be interpreted as a fourth supervisory visit or reevaluation. It says now it could be done by telehealth, and we've had some issues with that. And so it's not how I'm reading it, but I could see how it could be twisted to support that practice. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And the calls that come into the board, of course, that is a frequent call and a frequent question. And
what are you saying? How are you answering?
Well, the response on that is the way that the rules are written about the fourth visit is that's nowhere in the rules or statute does it call anything a supervisory visit. It is a reevaluation. Yeah. It is a reevaluation of the patient and to be done by the physical therapist. And that's the way the rule phrases it.
And that
rule also specifies that they should be providing the treatment that day too.
Absolutely.
And Karen, that didn't get changed in the rules. I read it detailed, but that didn't get changed. Right?
No, okay. Not at all.
Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then there it is. There's our mm-hmm. protection, I think, of the patient.
And the board recently adopted a policy statement in that sense. We will have to review all of the policy statements, and I anticipate some will come back before you for updates. Just simply to identify the you know, the students and as assistive personnel and all of that. So there'll be a process with that. I envision Mindy and Liz will probably be requested to review all of those policy statements in light of this new legislation.
Liz can do it when she's up at 3 o'clock in the morning with the baby.
Yeah.
Time.
Give us something to do.
I'll have plenty of time to read, so that'll be great.
You think you're going to have time to read.
Unless I do it at 3 a.m.
Well, yeah, I can definitely see this being something that we probably are going to see some issues coming to the board probably very soon. If people are reading into this the way that people have been asking me questions.
Yep.
So definitely, I think a policy statement kind of outlining, you know, you can use telehealth as a means. That doesn't mean you can be out of state. This doesn't really change anything about how the rules have been. You know, just something along those lines, I think, could be very helpful.
Right. And there already are statutes in the state governing the practice of telehealth. They are not specific to the PT board. They're for healthcare. And so they are not they're not in our chapter per se of the statutes. But they are posted on the website and they are available. So.
Okay.
Giovanni, you had one other question about, you know, what does it really change? One of the things that I would like to encourage, and of course everybody here has colleagues and to continue encouraging that, is for a lot of time, many years, people would just identify their license number as a numeric. But there, I don't anticipate that the numbers will ever cross for PT or PTA, but it's going to become much more important to really use that LPT dash, however many zeros and the number, or PTA dash. So that is the entirety of the license number that needs to be referenced rather than just a numeric reference. Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How many zeros should there be if your license only has four numbers?
Well, there you go. There's the question. So one system at that time that was issuing license numbers would have had six digits, so you would have had two zeros in front of it.
Okay.
There was a time frame where licenses issued with a number beginning with a three didn't have any zeros in front of it, and it was five digit. Now we're back to zeros. It depends on the way it was structured and whatever system at the time the license was. So, but the good news is they are all evident on the board's website using the Find a PT PTA. You can look up your license number and it will show it to you. As well,
see how many zeros
your wallet card and your wall certificates.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions about that? See everybody getting that glazed over look. The budget submission. So the budget was submitted. The budget was provided for your reviewing pleasure. We have once again asked for a 0.5 additional person, which would be fantastic because again, with renewals, they go up each cycle by about 10%. Each year we get more and more applicants. We have more pathways to practice being telehealth, PT compact licenses, along with education when these changes come about, education about just about everything that the board does. So that FTE number has remained four for more than a decade and our numbers have increased at a massive growth rate. So we're requesting it again. I don't know if we'll get it. There has been, you know, based on state budgetary items, there's been freezes of employment and all of that. So I don't know that we'll get it, but we've requested it. So cross your fingers.
Yes.
Any questions about the budget? All right. That brings us then to the typical monthly financials. Any questions there? Or the licenses and certificates that were issued? We had a fair number of those in August at the tail end of the renewal cycle.
You'll get to take certificates out of that.
We will.
Item.
We will.
Yeah.
Absolutely will.
A and B.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's it. One, if I can backtrack for just a second back to the implementation of the of the legislation. One of the questions that we're getting quite frequently has to do, of course, with the ability to order imaging and all things surrounding that. So at this point, the advice that staff is giving is that the board has not adjudicated any cases in that manner. The board does not have specific, you know, statutes or rules that address this in so much as can and can't do. So oftentimes they are referred back to the association who was the sponsor of the bill, who has provided some education in this arena. But until the board adjudicates cases and puts a policy in place, it's simply a part of the practice of physical therapy in Arizona.
The main question I keep getting from people about it is whether they're going to get, whether insurance will pay for it. And I keep telling them that's not a board issue, to be honest with you. You can order the imaging, but that doesn't mean that the insurance is going to pay for it. So the patient's going to have to talk to their insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely, Giovanni. And even physicians are getting more and more instances where they have to justify the need for imaging beyond plain x-ray. So it's definitely more onus on the provider to provide the reasoning.
Yeah.
So that was it. Sorry for the circular nature of reverting back. Are there any future agenda items?
One that I thought might be beneficial for us to talk about, just because I've noticed a few of these cases recently, is like the one that we had today with the compact license. One thing I'm just not sure about is if somebody's on a compact license, is there really any way for them to get an Arizona license without having to stop practice for a certain amount of time?
100%.
There is a way for them to do that? Okay. Because my understanding was once you get your driver, or you can't get your Arizona license till you have your driver's license, but once you get your driver's license, you have to end your compact. Is that not the case?
There is one, and Mr. Harris is going to stop me quickly because this is not on our agenda to discuss, but there is one application type that requires Arizona residents, which is in conflict with the compact that you shouldn't be a resident of the state. That is only one application type. So as long as they avoid that, they're golden. Our website even says that the universal recognition is not compatible with an active PT compact. People still do it.
Okay. Well, that helps me. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So would you like that to be a future agenda item or?
I mean, I think it would be nice just so that you're able to go a little bit more in depth on, you know, which would be the accurate application and things of that nature. I think it would just be nice to get that. Or if you want to just send me an email with that instead to avoid it being a future agenda item.
That's up to the board. I can do either or both.
I don't know. Does anybody else feel like that would be beneficial?
I would like to have a better understanding of the different licenses. Honestly, I am embarrassed to admit that I'm really not. Like if someone asked me, how are you licensed under, what's the word? I don't even know.
Under universal recognition.
Recognition. Yes. I would go, I don't know. Call Judy. I don't really know.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel.
I don't know. So I think it'd be really good to have just what each license is and how it's achieved and what it means. I think it'd be really great. We probably should ask this a long time ago, actually. But yes, thank you.
Well, the good news, I'm very well versed in all of those. So
yay!
Hey, we can certainly hold class.
Yeah.
So in essence, I've put down compact privilege. In essence, what you're asking is the pathways to practice in this state.
Yes.
And how to get there.
With endorsement is the other one.
With an an additional direction with respect to compact privileges. So
yeah, what would be the best route for them to take?
Yeah, we can certainly do that. Anything else?
No, we meet again before the annual meeting, but who's going to what city is it in?
I think it's Cedar Rapids.
That's right. You're going?
I'm going as the administrator. Good. Giovanni is the delegate, but he is unable to attend. Josh Greer is the alternate delegate. He will be attending and taking on all of the delegate duties.
There's voting, and so that's good. The voting for candidates for board and whatnot. So good.
Exactly. And then with the vacancy by Giovanni not being able to attend, Dr. Hike has expressed an interest in going, so I've inquired whether that was transferable, and as a matter of fact, just found out yesterday that yes, that can occur. So Dr. Hike has been put in contact with them to get that squared away.
Perfect. Mark Harris is like, why don't I get to go? You want to go to Cedar Rapids, dude?
No.
You can go.
I think we need to entertain a motion to adjourn before we talk about too many other things, though.
Oh, I get what you're saying.
Okay,
sorry. We were talking about future agenda items, and that will be in November as a summary of how the annual meeting went. So, yeah. Okay, that's where my head was at. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
So tick-tock is what he's saying.
We need a motion to adjourn.
So I
don't want to rush.
Get your vacation going, Josh. Get going.
Yes.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Yes.
All right. So I'm crediting Mr. Barton with that actual motion.
Absolutely.
So it's been moved and seconded to adjourn. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
No. No. Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
That was a good one, Dr. King. Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes. The meeting is adjourned at 1:33. The audio recording will end.
Who did the first and who did the second? Because
Mr. Barton did the first, Dr. Bastillo seconded.
Perfect. Thank you.
Recording is stopping at 1:33.